Today's episode of the Sidious Mag Podcast on the Sidious Mag Podcast Network is brought to you by More Than Running with Dana Giordano. We're now up to 7 shows on the Sidious Mag Podcast Network. We've got this one, Runners of NYC, Showrunners with Scott Fauble, Track and Field History with Jesse Squire, Running Things Considered, Price of a Mile whenever Woody feels like making an episode, and now this new show. I'm doing my best to keep you guys entertained during this quarantine, so if you're interested in sponsoring this show or any of those shows, shoot me an email, chris@sidiousmag.com. It's also found in the show notes. On More Than Running, Dana's going to sit down with many accomplished women to hear how they found success in the sport, whether it's on the track or on the roads or in other avenues, you know, as industry leaders or entrepreneurs. I'm very excited about producing that show. The first episode is out, and it features U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials runner-up Molly Seidel. And next week's show will feature Elle Puryear, the American record holder in the indoor mile. Check it out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, or Google Podcasts, pretty much wherever you get your podcast fix. Season 1 is underway. Subscribe, listen, rate, and review it. It's called More Than Running with Dana Giordano. My guest for today's episode is Morgan McDonald. He is a pro runner for Under Armour. And now we're going back-to-back episodes with Wisconsin stars. And I can't believe that it was only a year ago that Morgan was winning NCAA titles. He won the 2018 NCAA cross-country title, then went on to win the indoor 3K and 5K. And then he took the outdoor 5K in one of the best duels that we've seen in recent years between him and Grant Fisher. His personal best, I believe, is 3:55 for the mile and 13:15 for 5K. He's represented Australia at 2 world championships. So we unpack his start in the sport at a really young age, how he found Wisconsin, and the accomplished career that he was able to put together as a Badger. So without further ado, here is Morgan McDonald. All right, now we welcome on Morgan McDonald. Morgan, how is Madison, Wisconsin right now in the middle of this pandemic? For me, I feel like it'd be one of the top places to be quarantined.
Yeah, it's definitely not the worst. Similar to the rest of the states, it's got all the lockdowns and everything. But yeah, we don't have the same cases as, say, like New York or whatever. So I think it's a bit more of a relaxed vibe. And from a running standpoint, a lot of the places that we usually run at are still open. So it's actually been all right, not too bad. And I think a lot of other people have gone home from Madison, like all the students and stuff aren't here. So it's actually pretty chill right now.
How close is like this hit to home? Because I feel like we've gotten to the point where, you know, it's less than 6 degrees of separation between like you knowing someone who like has gotten the, you know, the virus, or know someone who's like battling on the front lines of this pandemic. Like what is the separation between you and someone that you know who is like facing this thing?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, in like, I have a pretty tight circle here, obviously, especially right now. And so like there's zero links to it from that standpoint. I mean, like, I'm sure everyone has done this, but like everyone, like all of us are like, anyone that like had the flu, like maybe like a month leading up to when an outbreak is like, that might've been coronavirus. I don't know. Like maybe it was, maybe we all already got it. But like, apart from that, in terms of like real like interactions, there's not much. I mean, I was mentioning before, my coach Mick Byrne is back in New York with his wife who works in a hospital. So she's like real frontline doing that. But, apart from that, it's not too bad. And my mom's actually an infectious diseases doctor back home in Australia. So you would think that it would be like very full on, but Australia has actually done a great job at, you know, dealing with it. And so she's told me that the hospitals there are like more chill than they've been for a long time. So yeah, actually not the worst.
What did she make of it? Like when she started following the news and all that kind of stuff about it, things getting like pretty dark and severe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely no expert, and she is, I guess, kind of an expert, but even her, like, I think the general expert opinion right now is, like, it's just uncertainty. Like, there's just so many unknowns, and so it's just, like, from, like, what she was telling me is just, like, follow the guidelines, don't be an idiot, use common sense, but beyond that, like, there's not kind of, like, that scientific that you might be looking for, that kind of scientific opinion. It's more like a common sense type thing, I would say.
One of the biggest uncertainties is just like you don't know when you're going to race again. Like everything has been wiped off the calendar. One thing that's for certain is, I guess, like your training setup. What is the setup right now?
So for me, I'm still living here in Madison. I'm still coached by Mick. And so it's pretty consistent, like from what I had in college. I mean, it's certainly different in a lot of ways as well. Being a pro runner now, like I did like a training camp in Flagstaff and stuff during January. So I'm doing all that. But like for now, it's just like everything's stripped back and I'm just here in Madison, just doing it with Mick.
We'll get to when your relationship with Mick started, but I want to go back to kind of your start with running, because I'm able to find results going back to 2012 for you. Your 3K PR was something like 8:17 in Sydney at the time. But before that, I'd already been reading that you'd been training and playing soccer to some extent when you were a much younger kid with like people that were older than you. Is that right?
That's exactly right. That's a good research there. I come up that kind of stage, like until I was 16, I would say. It's a little different of a setup in Australia, as I'm sure you might know, where it's more of a club system. It's not like as much of a strict school system. And so growing up, like a lot of guys, I was a big soccer player. That was kind of my main thing. And then I would do cross country during the winter, which is when it is in Australia. It's like a slightly different how it's set up. And I had a lot of success growing up doing cross country in Australia. Like we have nationals from when you're like 10 years old. And it's like based on age groups. It's not just like there's like the high school Foot Locker or NXN nationals. It's like there's a nationals meet and there's like an under 10s race and under 12s race and under 14s race. And so I had success doing that. But I was always running and then playing soccer at the same time. And I'd always get like growing pains or like different injuries by the end of the season. So I never actually did track when I was younger. Like I almost raced no track. But then when I was 16 and I stopped playing soccer is kind of when I committed more to running and I started racing track as well. So that's kind of why you see those results coming in like more around that time. And then the other thing you mentioned, running with older guys. So yeah, I was part of a squad. So it was more of a kind of like a social thing. Like I was in an elite squad, but like anyone that wanted to could turn up. Like that's kind of how it is or how it was for us. And so there was a lot of guys who were just like, I guess you would call them like hobby joggers or whatever, but like they're taking it somewhat seriously. But then there were also like real elite guys. So in my squad, and I didn't realize this, like, because when I was younger, I was not into running at all. Like I just didn't care. I didn't know it was like such a thing. So like I had a Ben St. Lawrence in my squad who was like a big mentor for me. And he was the Australian 10K record holder until recently. So he'd run like in the 2720s. And that was, I'm not sure exactly what year that was. Like it was around 2010 or something like that. And I just like didn't know that it happened. And this was a guy that was like in my training squad. Who was obviously, I wasn't running with him, but like we were in the same training squad and I was like around guys like that. So that's kind of how it was. And so when I did start to take it more seriously at kind of around that 16, I was very lucky to have like these great people to, kind of interact with and learn from. And I mean, really, like they've had a huge impact on me and like still to today, like they're some of my greatest mentors. So yeah, I was very fortunate to have that, I would say.
I think one of the first results was in 2013 U20 World Cross in Poland. You might have been, I think, like 16 at the time. Finished 33rd. And it's funny because I was looking at that result and I was like, oh, you finished right ahead of Ben Flanagan in that race.
Yeah. That's actually very funny because the reason I beat him, because like there are certain teams that you're looking at, like you're looking at like the Canadians or you're looking at the guys from USA. And the reason I beat him is because he fell over on the on the last hill. There was like, it was like a wild course. It was like snow and muddy. Like if you see anything from that race, like it was just wild, like nothing like I'd raced on before. And yeah, going down to the final straight was a downhill that he fell on and I passed him.
So, he's going to love hearing that.
Yeah.
How did you catch Wisconsin's attention? Because I think for a lot of people, I mean, it's very easy to go through, from an American standpoint, the high school process, and then you just apply to a bunch of different colleges. Sometimes you draw interest and recruiting letters. But for an international student, especially in, you know, Australia, how does that work?
Yeah, so for me, it was I knew that I wanted to come over to college. I always saw it as the best bridge between high school and becoming a professional runner. Like, there's just nothing else like it in the world, really. And I really wanted to be a part of it. So when I was probably around that same time, like 16 or whatever, by the time World Cross, I was already talking to coaches. Like, I was talking to coaches before that. So it was when I was 16, and I didn't really have like that many crazy stats kind of behind me to like get attention, but I sent out emails to a lot of different schools, the ones that I thought that I might be interested in. And obviously, like, you know, I got ignored by a bunch. I got some like no's. I got, but then from some, I got some attention, and one of them was Wisconsin. And so that's kind of how that started. I actually reached out to Mick first, and then I guess he liked like my credentials or whatever. And he sent me like a long reply, and then we started talking on the phone. And then, especially after going to World Cross and stuff, there was still like a time period there where like that was still a long kind of recruiting window between like me sending that email and when I actually made my decision. And I had some good results in that time. So I would say more coaches reached out to me during that time. I mean, it's so easy now. Like, if you can see what times kids are running anywhere in the world, and then the coach can just send you a Facebook message. That's essentially how it happens, I think, for a lot. And so I got a lot of that. And I ended up coming on it. Like, I would say from there, it was a pretty standard recruiting process, just like chatting to coaches and that. I still had like no understanding, though. That was the difference, is like, I didn't know like where Wisconsin was on a map, you know, that type of thing. Like, right. I didn't know how college worked. And even after my visit, like, this is what I'll tell international kids, is like, it's just different. And like, you're not going to know what you're getting into until you're there. So you just got to kind of do like the best that you can with the information that you have. And for me, that ended up culminating in having a visit to Wisconsin and Princeton, actually. And then I had an unofficial visit at Stanford. I visited there as well. And it was after that where I came back home and I like decided that I wanted to go to Wisconsin.
What was your first impression of Madison?
I loved it. I mean, I just thought I'd never really been in a place like this that was like a university town, a little bit smaller. That college vibes is just cool. And like being on the lakes and everything. And I just remember being on my visit and being with the guys on the team. And like, just, I had never been a part of anything like that before. And there was just instant like attraction to that I just really fell in love with. And then the coaches, like Mick and Gavin, like, they're like Irish guys. They're fun. They don't take themselves too seriously. My mom was on the visit with me, and my mom like loved them as well. So it was just like, there were a lot of positives straight away, pretty much.
But what about your first winter? Because, I mean, for me, being from New York, going to Milwaukee, I experienced that first winter, and it was a different kind of cold that I had ever experienced.
Yeah, I have, like, a weird opinion on this that, like, I don't expect anyone else to, like, share with me, is that, like, I weirdly like the winter. Like,
no way.
Like, it's weird. That's why I say, like, I don't – because I know a lot of people that hate the winter, obviously. Like, that's what you meant to do. You meant to hate it. But for me, something about having the seasons – and I don't know, I kind of like dressing up in the wintertime in the snow. It doesn't faze me that bad. Like, I have, this is actually my weirdest opinion on it, is that like everything here is designed for the winter, right? So like in terms of how it feels to you, like I think, and your body adapts to it, like it doesn't feel that bad. Whereas in Australia, everything's designed for the summer. So when it does get cold in the winter, which is a lot warmer than here, obviously. But to me, it feels so cold there because nothing is like designed for it. So like, I always felt like it felt honestly like similar, which is like ridiculous to say because it's just not. But yeah, the winter didn't faze me that bad. But there is a big asterisk that I have gone like somewhere warm every summer break for like, I mean, winter break, like Christmas time break for like 3 or 4 weeks, every single one. I've like gone somewhere warm, which is normally back home to Australia. So that's kind of like a big asterisk, I would say.
So kind of very similar to the questions I've asked for, you know, to Selinsky and that kind of stuff. The first time you meet with your coach. It's Mick Byrne. The training philosophy, what was that like, and why has it meshed so well that it continues to this very day?
I think a lot of it comes down to just like the type of athlete that I am. I do well off, I mean, the type of coach that Mick is, and that's kind of like a strength-based approach. You know, like we don't do, from like a training standpoint, we don't do anything too crazy. Like I never think there's like secrets of what we do. It's just like good strength work. And, you know, Mick, like the big thing for me and Mick is like Mick just kind of knows how to train me or train people as individuals just so well, I think. And so like it is just strength work, but there is like in terms of like a day to day, like adjustments and stuff and like giving me what I need when I need it. I think it's just like, he's just so good at that. And like, he's just time and time again, proven to kind of, you know, he just gets me. And especially like even going further than that, like from a run, that like from a running standpoint, that's true. But also from like a personal standpoint, like he treats you as like a person, not just like an athlete, I would say. And he really understands the kind of stresses and pressures as a shooter. Like, and he kind of takes a lot of that into like how he coaches you. And yeah, for me, that's just worked really well, because I'm the type of person who I'm very self-driven, but I have to like believe in what I'm doing. Like, it has to be very authentic. So like, if I don't believe in it, like I'm not going to care really. But like, if it is something that I believe in and like that excites me, like I'll you know, put 100% into it, and like I'll give it everything I can. And you know, Mick is the type of guy that can get me to like do that when it counts. And I think that's just like, that's what's why it's worked so well.
Is there a little bit of intimidation that you have to kind of get over the first time that you meet Mick? Because like, especially when you were coming in, it was just after, you know, the Maverick Darling Mo Ahmed teams that were so dominant. It's kind of like there's a little bit of pressure coming into such a storied program already.
Yeah, I mean, I think a bit of the naivety helped me there, I would say. I didn't fully appreciate that, I would say, before I came in here, like how special it was. Obviously, I thought it was so cool. Like, don't get me wrong, like I was like a fanboy when I was like 16, like watching that stuff, but I didn't really appreciate it. And I think more strong than feeling an intimidation / pressure was like an excitement. Like, I just had such an excitement to like come in and be a student athlete here and like have a new coach who had that success and just be a part of it. And I think that's was the main driver for me, like coming in as a freshman, was just, I was just so excited to like be there and be in these races and do the training with the guys.
So the notable section under your page on the Wisconsin bio is like almost 300 words. So we're going to do our best to unpack some of the important stuff there. So 75th place at your first NCAA cross country championship, you're the fourth freshman in that field. And I think like what I remember about that team was that it was kind of at first considered a little bit of a rebuild, right, of sorts with Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Because of just how young it was. Looking at the names on that squad, it was like you, Carl Hirsch, right? Yeah. I remember him because Marquette recruited him. Yeah. And then
Malachi Strobogen was our top guy. He was around 10th that race. So he was like by far our top guy. And then he was only a redshirt freshman, redshirt sophomore, I want to say, came around 10th. And then the rest of our team was freshmen and sophomores. Hardy, right? Joe Hardy was the other true freshman with me. We had one fifth-year senior. But apart from that, we were all freshmen and sophomores. So, we were extremely young. And that race was an interesting one. I think we felt like we could do a lot better than what we did there as a team, and but like we just didn't really have it that day. Funny story from that one is that, so me and Joe were, this is like probably, this is not a smart thing to do, but me and Joe were the two true freshmen, and so they just put us together and we roomed together for everything that season. And the coaches have definitely learned now to match like a freshman with an older kid, because like the stuff that we did was just so stupid. And like the on like most trips something happened, and what happened at Nationals is that we accidentally wore each other's spikes, and we're like three sizes different. So like, I don't know how that happened. Like clearly we were like really nervous or something and didn't notice it. I'm kind of more surprised that Joe didn't notice it, because like I'm smaller than him, and so they would have been really tight for him. I remember that day was a bit muddy, and I remember just like at the bottom of a hill where it was muddy, just feeling like I was sliding in my shoes, and I was like a bit confused by it. And yeah, it turns out we wore each other's spikes that day. So yeah, that was an interesting, like I personally felt like I was good enough to do better in that race. However, the way that I raced it, I just put myself really far back, and there's just too many bodies, too many like good people, too many, it just takes too much energy to like navigate through this pack. So yeah, like I wasn't very happy with that. That definitely like kind of fueled me to think that I could do a lot better than that. But I mean, I certainly took a lot from it. So yeah.
And then what's Mick's conversation with you guys as soon as that season ends?
I mean, right after the race, he told us that we all ran scared, like we ran afraid, which, funny story, like that morning of the race, for some reason, we were watching The Conjuring in our hotel room. So like, I mean, maybe there's some truth to that. But then after that, kind of like, you know, you put so much into a season. And so after it's like, whether the result is good or bad, it's generally like, all right, let's chill out for a bit. But there was certainly a lot of excitement about how young we were, and we had still done okay. And like, especially like we did really well at Big Tens that year. Like we knew we had a lot of good young guys. So there was a ton of excitement for what was to come.
How do you weigh kind of like that approach to Big Tens when it's like, sometimes it's the Big Ten conference in particular is so competitive. So like getting yourself hyped up for that, but then knowing you have to peak at NCAAs and, you know, at regionals and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's easy. Kind of like the mantra that's said by Mick and like this team is like Big Tens and beyond. So like it's kind of like a mindset that the season starts at Big Tens. Like that's like when it matters. And then it's like from then everything onwards is like when the real season is. So I think that's kind of a way to like definitely chill out before that point, so you have enough kind of in the tank for that. But also like Big Tens is just the vibe of like a Big Ten meet is just different from any other meet. That like there's no way that you can't like be hyped up and excited for it, because it's just such like the rivalry, and like the, it's a smaller field, like the competition there is just different to what you'll find at any other meet. So you're always going to get up for a Big Tens. But then yeah, we kind of always had that mindset that like that was like taking care of business, and then but there was still a lot more to achieve after that.
What was kind of like the turning point in 2015-16 for you? Because that's kind of, you take that time to really establish yourself. You go from 75th at Cross to then like in 16 was the year that you take 5th in the 5K at Outdoors. So like what was done in that in between year?
Yeah, so like there would like, there's kind of a lot, to be honest. Like there's kind of a lot, like, cause what you didn't mention is like that the cross country season in between those, cause then that was my sophomore year. The next year, that cross country season was when we ended the Wisconsin 50 year streak of making nationals. And we had come into the season, preseason ranked 4th. Like, can you imagine that? Like, we were ranked 4th before the season, and then we don't make nationals that year. And there was, like, so much that you could attribute that to, but, like, I would just sum it up to pretty much just, like, inexperience and the young team. Like, we were just too excited. Like, we got after it that summer, training-wise, and, like, by the time the season rolled around, like, a lot of guys were hurt. Like, Malachi, who had come 10th the year before, he had, like, a stress fracture in his sacrum. A bunch of other guys had different injuries. I personally was like really burnt out from like a, just physically, just like I'd just been training on a new level, and I just hadn't I hadn't really done it what I would say is like the best way to do it. I'd kind of just gone too hard without pacing myself. And so that was what happened in cross country in end of 2015. And then I took like a long break after that. And I think for me personally, like from a physical standpoint, that break like kind of let all that training, like my body adapt to it, I suppose. And then coming out 2016 was when I had what I would say would be like my NCAA, like my breakout on an NCAA level, because that indoor season, in one of the first, my second meet, I ran 3:57 in the mile, which was a huge PB for me. And so that's when I made that breakthrough to get to that level where, you know, I'm like making nationals indoors, and I'm like, then I'm looking at like, I should be able to like start competing on the NCAA level. And so yeah, that outdoor season was just like really, really good for me. I was kind of like just, I was just in a great spot, and it culminated with me running, 13. That was a great 5K field. It was really it was like Pat Tiernan leading it out, making a quick race. Ed Cheswick winning it in the end, but like Sean McGaughty, and Sean McGaughty was like amazing. So to come fifth in that field as a redshirt freshman was really big, and I ran 13:29 to do that, which was like huge for me. So yeah, by that point it was like, all right, like I'm here, this is looking good. Like in these next coming years, like that, I was a redshirt freshman coming fifth in the NCAA 5K. Like obviously I'm thinking like, all right, next time I do this, like I'm trying to be at least top three or win.
See, from like the media perspective, and then also from like the fans, we only get to see those races. So what does that look like in practice when you are kind of feeling that ascent to the next level? Where is it Mick, you know, pushing, you know, writing down faster paces for your workouts? Or are you going a little faster than what he prescribes? What does that look like behind the scenes?
Behind the scenes, it doesn't look anything too special, I would say, to be honest. It's like kind of like sticking to the plan, being consistent, gradually building things up. I was very lucky during that time to have Maverick Darling as my main training partner. He'd come back and was kind of transitioning to a role as like a volunteer coach, but still running that year. I think that was his last year professional. And so he was great to guide me. And we did some great workouts together. But, you know, there was nothing really that crazy. That was a kind of a big learning curve for me in those first couple of years in college, was that I didn't have to do the crazy training to get the results. I remember, especially like my freshman year of cross, me and Joe, like we were excited, and we were pretty talented, so we could do some big sessions. And I remember there was one session where we did these mile repeats on the course, and like our last one was, you know, something in like the 420s, like something like that. And we dropped Malachi on it, and we were just like so pumped. We like, it was such a big deal. And then Malachi would beat us by like a minute in a race. Like he'd literally beat us by a minute. And so it was like, all right, like this, like it's not quite like, you don't, this isn't the way you have to do it. There's like a lot of other factors at play. So yeah, after kind of learning that lesson, like I've never been the type of guy who feels like they have to crush it in a session in order to be able to race well. It's definitely just about consistently and like feeling all right, you know. And I trust that like if I've got that training, and like I'll be good enough to race at a high level.
For some reason, while I was like doing like the research, I thought you were an Olympian in 16, but especially after that 5K, why no going for the Olympics that year?
That's a good question, because I had told Mick like a year before that I wanted to make the Olympics, like that was my goal. And when I said that, my PB was slower than 14 minutes. And I had made such a big jump that season. But just the way things played out, like racing past NCAAs was just not really quite on the cards for me at that point. I just like, what I could have, but it just like wasn't, I had done so much that season. And to be fair, like making the 5K in the Australian team was not like an easy task, because I mean, there were, the third person who made that team was Pat Tiernan, who I knew like was better than me at the time. Like I knew like I would have to beat him for that spot. So it would have been a long shot, I would say. And I was just really happy with like what I had achieved that season, to the point where it was like, yeah, we've done enough. Like, I had made such a big jump, and I was really happy. But yeah, I remember like one of my teammates saying like, you were going great. Like you could have kept chasing it, but it just, for whatever reason, like, I don't think it was a conscious decision. Like we're not going to chase this. Like we're going to get ready for cross. It wasn't a conscious decision like that. It was just kind of like how it played out in the end.
So nothing, there probably weren't too many like feelings of like missing out when you're actually watching the Olympics at that point then.
No, that there wasn't, because I mean I was so young, and yeah, I was content, you know. Like, to be honest, like the way I am, like once that race was over, like I took my two weeks off, and like I stopped paying attention to track for a while, you know, and I'm like enjoying the summertime. So yeah, I didn't really have any like feelings of regret or anything about that.
So I think the following year is then 17 when you redshirt cross, right?
This is hard. So yeah, 2016 cross I ran.
That's right. Yeah.
I came seventh. That's when Pat Tiernan won. That was a really good season. That was a big season for us. We won the Big Ten title back. And then 2017
outdoors, you win Big Tens, right? And then
So very, very interesting season, where 2017 indoors, I come out and things are going really well, but I kind of got like my first major type injury. And I mean, it wasn't that major. I had a stress reaction in my foot, and I raced at Big Tens on it when I didn't know it was a stress reaction yet. And then I found out like the Monday after, and I'm like, all right, like I'm not going to nationals. Like I'm getting this better. And so we took the time to get it better and work back into it. And just the way things worked out, I wasn't ready to race a 5K outdoors until Big Tens. And like, we were very confident that I was good enough to get it in that race. And I even had like some guys help me out with the pacing. But like, we turn up at, it was at Penn State, which is like on the side of a hill. I'm pretty sure it's just like a wind tunnel. And it was like the windiest day ever. And I was just like, oh, I have a bad feeling about this. And like, we go out running as hard as we could. Like we're dropping people, and this is like good guys. And but we couldn't get the time, and I think we ran around 14:15 or 14:10 or something, and I ended up winning. But yeah, that was my NCAA season over, because I didn't qualify for regionals. And so, but that season, different to the one before, is like, all right, like I'm ready to go, like let's keep racing, like I can qualify for the world champs, like if things keep going like the way I think they can, like I'm pretty good. And so yeah,
it was just like, yeah, you ran 14:14, I believe it was, and then it's just like there was no guarantee we were going to see you for the rest of the season, because of just like the way the the regional system works. It's kind of like, there was a lot of, I think there was a little bit of criticism in the fact that it's like you can win your conference championship, but then beyond that it doesn't really mean anything unless you hit the time, was how it panned out.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird, because well, the reality is like the regional times, like every conference winner, like is able to hit them normally on any day where it's not like 40 mile an hour winds. Like if you're trying, you can hit 14 minutes for the 5K or 14:05, whatever it is. So like in a normal circumstance, it's going to happen. But just the way it played out this year, it just didn't. And that was, yeah, that kind of sucks. But like, then I got to do some other cool races, which I probably wouldn't have got to do otherwise. So, I went to the Portland Track Festival 5K, which is the one at the same time as NCAAs. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching NCAAs like the day or 2 days before, and that was when Grant Fisher beat Justin Knight. And like, obviously, I'm watching that, I'm like I feel like I could run in that and win that, you know, like not necessarily that I would have won, but like I'm like, right now I'm watching this from home, and I'm an NCAA runner, and I feel like I should be there, like competing. And so, yeah, that's like, that is what it is. Like it, by that point it was all right. And I had a 5K to go race, and that was the 5K there. And I ran not a big PB, but I ran a PB of 13:23, which was huge, because like the qualify for world champs, I think, was 13:21. And so I was like, I can really do this. And then, so after that, make the decision to go to Europe, first time racing in Europe. And I got into the 5K Houston, which is a great meet.
And it's nice to get into that 5K.
It is nice. It was awesome. It was like, it was so cool. Like that trip was really fun, because like, you know, first time, just everything's new. I started off with a mile in the Morton Mile, which was a great experience. It was like that track. is like, well, the club at that track is like Mick's club. Like that's where he grew up racing. So I got to go race there, and I did surprise myself a bit with like doing really well on that mile, running 3:55, I think, and coming second. And then, yeah, I ran the 5K Houston and ran 13:15. And a couple of days later, got the call that I'd made the Australian team for the London World Champs. So that was like, I mean, that was just amazing. Like, I mean, obviously, I want to do well at NCAAs, but like, representing Australia at a senior level like that, it was just like, that was so huge for me. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of like with the, like I've asked you before these major breakthroughs, it's like nothing special really is done in training, but for you to run 3:15 in the middle, like toward the end of like the European season, what did you learn about structuring your training during those couple weeks? Because, you know, from when I went in 2013 and 2015, seeing like how pro athletes were going about their day to day, it was different because it's like you're racing like maybe every 3 or 4 days. And so you can't sneak as many workouts in. So did you have to do anything out of the ordinary before that 3:15?
Yeah, the 13:15 was like, it was interesting because, and this is where I say Mick is like amazing at making adjustments, because like, there was really a lack of special stuff. I think that was because I come on a great mile. And so it's like, I've just run this great mile. Like, I'm like, you could go push it with a big session, but like, obviously you need to let your body recover. So like, I remember my session before that 13:15, I remember doing like a 4 mile tempo at like, and I couldn't really run much under 5:20s, which is like ridiculous, but that was how I felt that day. And it just like was recovering. And so like there wasn't really a feeling that I had to do anything, you know, because like I knew it was there. I just had to let my body recover and like be ready for that race. I think after that I think that was about a week or 10 days in between the races. So I did that one, and then I did like a good track session after. But yeah, at that point, it's so much about just like changing your training based on what races you've done or what travel you've done, and just like, yeah, being aware of like the different stresses on your body during that time so that you just don't overdo it, pretty much, I think.
So at Worlds, it's your first time there. Yeah. What is kind of like, how are you taking all like the experience in without like getting like too over your head in terms of just like making sure you appreciate the moment, but at the same time knowing you have to actually take care of a race?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really cool experience, obviously. But like, really, I just, you know, I enjoyed being a part of the Australian team. I enjoy like a lot of those guys that I'm around, like they're good friends of mine that like I don't get to see too often. So it was just like enjoying time with them and just taking care of business from a running standpoint, just doing the things that I know like I need to do and that work for me. And then for the, like, in terms of approaching the race, like, I really wanted to make the final. That was obviously my goal, and I missed that by a little bit. And like, I kind of made some mistakes in that race, I would say. I got a little bit antsy, like with like a K to go or something. I went like, made this kind of wide move, like around to the front. I think I like saw Mo Farah was like in front of me. I'm like, yeah, I kind of want to pass him just so like, so I can say I did it. But like, yeah, and then like I kind of got smoked on the second last lap. Like those guys were just better than me. Like that's reality. Like I was good, but like those guys, I mean, I was 13:15 good. Those guys were like sub 13 good, which at that level is like a world apart. So like what they could do, I had a really good last lap, but what they could do over like the last K was like something that I couldn't compete with. So I really fell off on like the second last lap. And I almost got back on the last lap, but I just didn't quite have it. So yeah, I was disappointed to not make the final there, but still content, like, with the season as a whole.
Did you know kind of as soon as your race was done, or did you, that this is not going to be as good enough a time to reach the final because there was one more heat? Or did you watch that last heat thinking there's still a chance?
Still a chance for sure, because I think I ran about 13:30, which, like, isn't slow. So, like, depending on what happened... But like those guys can like run 13:30 off like walking the first couple laps. It's pretty crazy. Like, because our first K was super slow, But like then we still ran 13:30. You know what those guys can do is like is next level. And I was definitely like wishful thinking. I thought I would have a chance. So yeah, and this is same thing. Not to skip too far ahead, but like same thing happened in Doha where I was like I ran solid, but I didn't quite make it. And like the thing that actually like the one thing that pissed me off, which I was just like I can't believe you're making me do this right now, is one of the media people was like, I'm going to interview you as if you've qualified. Like, pretend that you've qualified. And, like, because we want your reactions to post if you do make it through. And I'm just like, I can't believe, like, you're telling me to do this right now. Like, this sucks. Like, so that was, like, the one thing that, like, I was like, wow. But apart from that, it was, yeah, it's just wishful thinking. And then you don't make it. And then it's just like, you're just sad.
That's absurd that someone would be like, hey, can you fake it for a quick second just
I know. That's what I thought, but like I don't know. That's how they do it, I guess.
All right. So you did mention sort of the same thing, similar thing happens in Doha just last year.
Yeah.
I mean, 18, but we're already talking about Doha. I mean, what have you learned about those world championship races that now that you've got toping towards you know, something like 2021 Olympics, is it more of just like getting yourself in the right position? Is it kicking, you know, two laps out? What is it that you have to hone in over these next, you know, 16 months?
So like Doha was like a lot more, I took that a lot worse, I would say, because I really thought that I should be in that final. I remember, I don't know if Mick said this like after the NCAA season or during it, but like he had said to me, like, if you don't make the final at World Champs, like this season's a failure. And like, I don't say that to like say that Mick like was tough on me. I just say that to say that like that was our expectation, that like I thought I was good enough to do that. That one stung more because I really thought I knew I was better than 2 years before, but I missed out by about the same amount. But again, what it taught me, I guess what it cemented to me was just like these guys are better than me. And I was good. I was good enough to like the level of training I was doing. I was good enough to like be very competitive in the NCAAs and like at a certain level. But like rather than tactics or anything, like you can get caught up in like race tactics at this level, but the reality is like I know that when I was at the bell, like when we were at the bell in that race, I was just so much like working so much harder than these guys. So like, and that's what it comes down to, I think. So yeah, it was really just like I gotta get better, like I gotta train a bit harder, I gotta keep improving, like, and I'll be able to compete with them, but I'm just not quite there yet.
So, I mean, you did reach out sort of like after the Selinsky podcast. So it's like hearing him talk about what it was like racing against Kipchoge and Bekele, where it's like these guys are just coasting and making the first like 4K of a 5K look so easy that it's just like you need to get into that position where you yourself are making it feel that easy for that long. And it's just it's not something that can happen overnight.
Yeah, and that's the reality, because like even at like not quite the world level, like the levels that I've like been successful at, like people will ask me, for example, like how do I get my speed better? Like how do I pretty much make my finishing kick better? Like, because obviously I that's kind of one of my strengths. And like my answer is like just get stronger, like because that's all I know. I mean, obviously there's different stuff that you can do. Like I'm doing strides and all that, like all that standard stuff. But there's no, for me at least, there hasn't been any secret to it apart from like just being stronger. And so that's kind of how I look at it.
All right. So we'll dive into that kick a little bit because it's what won you the cross country title in 2018. That season, you're just kind of you're just sitting there waiting and until it's kind of like the favorite is just waiting there for the postseason to emerge. And then it's just like, let loose. For you, was that kind of just what it was? It was just like, all right, I'm gonna wait it out, and then when Mick gives the green light, I'm just gonna go.
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, like that is what it comes down to when you're in that kind of zone. Like the reality was, I mean, obviously those were some great, great guys that I was running against, but I knew that none of them were like that much better than me. You know, like I knew that I could stay with all of them. So kind of the way that Mick and I approached that race, and in general, this is how we approached every single one of those NCAA races during my final year, was stay with it, like stay up there in contention, like protect your spot, but like relax and conserve energy. And then when I felt the time was right, I make that move and just make sure that like I knew that when I was making that move, kind of it was going to be like a decisive, it was going to be like the final move made, you know, to win that race. And so that's pretty much how like kind of all those races to an extent ended up playing out. And certainly in that cross country one, when you're racing 10K cross country and there was a pack of like really good guys, it was definitely like just chill, like don't really overexpose yourself in anything. And I mean, that was such a wild race for me, like on the home course here in Madison in the snow, like just like I couldn't have like dreamt it to be any more perfect than it ended up being. And yeah, just like that race, kind of just the tension just building throughout it with like all those guys there being together. And like we weren't running slow, you know, like it wasn't like a jog fest or anything, but it was just all these good guys just going at it. And especially that last kind of K or 2K, like the tension really building. And then, you know, coming down the final straight where it's just like deafening noise of seas of Badger fans, all the red, like just on either side of me. It wasn't at all like a conscious decision to like, I'm going to kick at this point. It kind of just happened. Like, it was just like the tension had just risen to a point where I'm like, oh shit, like I'm all out sprinting right now. let's go. So that, yeah, that's kind of how that one felt.
Yeah, on Instagram, you described it as like the coolest cross country race that you've been a part of. You know, it made for, it was exactly what everyone had wanted. It was you and Grant Fisher. It was the duel that people kind of expected. And was that the moment that made coming back worth it? Like, was that part of the reason why you wanted to come back in the first place?
Yeah. So, yeah, rewinding back a little bit, like, talk of hosting a nationals cross country here in Madison had been happening since my freshman year. And like they knew if it was going to happen, it was going to be in my fifth year. So that was something that had been on the cards for a long time. And yeah, to be able to compete in that, that was one of the biggest factors in really like finally making that decision to redshirt my cross country season in my fourth year here. Like, just to be able to have that experience of racing it here in Madison was like, we knew that it was going to be so special. And like, we wanted to have the best team possible. A lot of it was from a team standpoint rather than just like talking about myself as an individual. A lot of it was like, we want to have the best team possible to try and get after it for hosting nationals here in Madison. So that was a big factor in the decision. But yeah, it was certainly, I mean, I wouldn't say that winning that race made it worthwhile, because like it would have been worthwhile anyway, even if I hadn't won, but it certainly was freaking awesome.
That morning, I mean, compared to the very first one, you're not watching a scary movie. You're not putting on the wrong spikes. What was the lead up to that moment like?
It was interesting. It was interesting because I had been in class earlier in that week, like Monday, Tuesday, and I'd been really like nervous. And like, I'd never gotten nervous like 5 days out from a race like that before. But by the time, like the last couple of days leading in, like the nerves actually went away and it was excitement. Like, I was just so excited to get out there and race. And yeah, I think a lot of that was, so Malachi had been the leader on the team my first few years here, and kind of like the message that he sent to me on how to like approach that final season was just like pretty much just saying like, this is it. Like, this is experiences that you're going to cherish for the rest of your life. So just be in the moment, just make the most of them, like both the good and the bad. And so that was the mindset that I was trying to adopt, was just like, whatever it happens, whatever it is, just like enjoy it. And like, definitely like the excitement and everything that was going around was pretty easy to enjoy once you kind of looked at it in that way. Like, I just remember race day, like seeing that it had snowed. Cause like, it was the day before the race, there was no snow on the ground. It was like, and the course was frozen. Like, it was like a track. like earlier in the week. It would have been so quick to run that. But then we wake up on race day and it was like white. I was just like, wow, this is going to be a freaking awesome day. And yeah, and it was just standard, you know, business trip. Like we were in a hotel, go have breakfast with the guys. I would do a shakeout, then have breakfast with the guys. I'd turn up in the course and yeah, try to be casual about it. It was like, I just remember like how many people that I knew there watching and like how many Badger fans were just going crazy and just enjoying it. It was like, it was so just fun, I guess, like just enjoyable. It was so easy to just feed off that energy and just kind of like channel that into like what we were doing.
How does Wisconsin celebrate a guy who wins an NCAA title on his own campus? Aside from potential party, but then after that, beyond that, just kind of on the more professional side of things, like, were you at a basketball game or a football game? Were they just like,
yeah, there's certainly the unprofessional side of doing it. But from a more professional standpoint, I got like a good amount of attention from like different people. I got an email from like the chancellor or whoever's like the head of the university. That was pretty cool. And then I got like the I'm not sure if I got presented at a football game or a basketball game. I was probably I'm not sure. It was one of those, like, I got presented and it was like, yeah, pretty awesome. It was a cool time to be, well, especially going forwards, like, because I got presented a couple of times, because that's kind of what they do every time is you get, like, the football or the basketball game. And then during the winter, like, winning those other titles, like, Wisconsin had then, like, Alicia winning nationals and indoors, and then our women's hockey team won, and then we had a swimmer who won some titles. So there was like a lot of kind of celebration like throughout the rest of that year as well. But yeah, definitely like getting the football game and stuff, which is always like an interesting experience, because like you kind of like, oh man, these people don't care about me, like I'm just like a cross-country runner, and you're kind of nervous because like you are like in front of like 80,000 people. But then you get out there and it's like the people just like love it, like they just go crazy. Like I mean, half of them are probably drunk, so like they'll go crazy over anything, but the people really like give you a lot of love and a lot of good energy, so it's very, very special.
The other race to highlight is obviously the 5k outdoors. You close in 52.91. You beat Grant Fisher again. How do those two races compare? If you were to pick one, which is the better one in your book?
I guess it depends on how you define better, because from like an experience standpoint, like I don't think I'm ever really going to have a race that like compares to like winning like a cross country title on your home soil. Like everything is just so perfect about that. But in terms of like pure racing, like showing that like I could have like having that finishing speed was like, I'd obviously never like close anything close to that. And, like Grant was really good, and like so we just had such a great battle, and it was just like to be able to hold it, I guess, throughout, like from cross country all the way to the end of outdoors, was just like, you know, that made that final one like so special, to be able to be like that consistent, I suppose. And that race was like, that was a cool race. I mean, those races are weird now that I look back at them. I just like, it's pretty much, I just feel like I just entered like the most intense like flow state, where like my memories of them is like not like, I'm not gonna say like they weren't painful, but like I was just so accepting that they were gonna be painful and that I was like willing to do whatever like it took, and like I knew I was good enough to compete, so I wasn't gonna like let anyone beat me, I suppose. And like I think like closing in 52 is kind of like the product of that, where like, if you would ask me, like, I wouldn't really say that, like, I'm going to be able to close in a 52, but, like, it was just on that day, like, that's what I had to do to win, and, like, so that's kind of how it played out. And Mick actually, it was kind of, like, an interesting chess battle between me and Grant in terms of, like, because obviously we're actually very similar runners, like, if you think about it. We're both very, like, strength-oriented with big kicks, essentially, who can, like, do well in the mile up to the 10K or whatever. So, like, Mick kind of, like, caught how that race would go pretty well, because, like, it had kind of been an interesting battle between us, like, who has the lead of the bell in a few of the races leading up to that. And that had kind of decided some of the races during indoors. And I think that's more important in indoors to have an earlier lead, But like I kind of felt like Grant was really going to want to have the lead at the bell going into that outdoor 5K. And if you watch the race, like he really did. If you watch the video, like we like kind of jostled over that. And so from that point on, and Mick like said, like, that's what's going to happen, and just sit on his shoulder. And you can see like in the final 200, I like go to his outside shoulder, which like doesn't really like, I don't really know why.
On the turn, yeah.
Yeah, on the turn, it's like, why is he on his outside shoulder? I don't really know why I was there, but Mick told me to do that, so I did it. And it just felt right. And then, like, coming down that last 100, it's just, like, I had an extra gear, you know? And, like, that was exactly how Mick said it, like, I should play it, and just, like, just turned out so perfect again. So it was, like, yeah, from a race standpoint, that one was pretty awesome as well.
Crazy because, like, the last month and a half or so, time has felt so slow that it feels like that was much longer than just a year ago.
Yeah, that's, yeah, 100%. Wow. Yeah, I haven't even thought about it like that. Like, that was, yeah, I feel like so much has changed for me, like, totally. Yeah, that's what crazy.
What is I guess after that, you're able to have a bit of a pro season, you know, with Worlds. Race the London Diamond League, you run Fifth Ave and you run Long Island. What did you make of just kind of like that first season as a pro? Because you were already kind of like running fumes, sort of.
The surprising thing is that it didn't feel that at all. Is the way we had, like, our approach to the whole season had been like, we want to do world champs. So we had kind of given ourselves like that kind of timeline. And so it was good because it meant like every single race, like indoors, for example, I was like, well, it isn't for 6 months. So like, who cares? Like, not that who cares about indoors, but like, I don't need to be doing anything too crazy, like get too caught up on anything. Like this is going to be a long season. So that was the mentality that we had. And, you know, there was like some nice breaks in the season, kind of like natural little downtimes and breaks that, helped with that for sure as well. It was interesting because, you know, I really thought I was in amazing shape, like kind of going into that. But then I actually like was a little bit hurt after NCAA Outdoors. I went on like a week trip with my family, and I think, I don't really know if it was from the race or it was from like doing a lot of walking on that trip. Like, I went to like Yosemite and stuff, but I had like a foot problem coming out of it. And I tried to train on that for a few weeks and I wasn't going well. So it ended up, I had to take like a full week off and stuff. And at that point in the year, like, it's taking that much time and then having to work back into it. Like, that's wasting a lot of time, which is like, you know, that's peak like pro racing time right there. And so I honestly, like, in terms of going to that London meet to get the 5K, I might not have gone and run there because I didn't think I would, because I'd just come off like a week off. I might not have done that if I didn't, I had to leave the country because of my visa. Like, because as an international student, you have like a certain amount of days after you graduate to leave. And so I had to leave around that time anyway. Like, I'd been scheduled to do some earlier races that I had to pull out of. And like, so I was just like, man, like, this is not going to go well. Like, I'm meant to go do this race and go to Europe. But like, I did like two workouts before it, and like, they were not impressive. And like, so that race, like, I managed to run the time, which was amazing. But like, I was kind of annoyed because I really felt like that wasn't reflective of like how good I had been a bit before that. And then, but luckily I had the time. So then I was able to like come back and regroup and get some solid training under my belt again. And so then, like, at the very end of that season, like going to the Long Island Mile and like Fifth Ave and then doing World Champs, I felt like I was like on form again for that. So I was pretty happy that I kind of got good shape for that. But then, yeah, obviously Doha, like, didn't go quite as well as I'd hoped, but like, I was happy that I had gotten back to like a good shape where I, like, I think I put myself in a good spot to like have success. So yeah, it was an all right little first half pro season, I guess. It was okay.
Yeah, now your second one is just, you know, who knows when it's actually gonna like happen.
Yeah, it's pretty non-existent so far.
Yeah, how are you taking things day by day now?
So, like, day by day, I'm just like chilling out, honestly. Like I was pretty like pro runner lifestyle, full on taking things seriously, like during January or whatever. I didn't have the best like fall and winter training. Like I had a few little niggles here and there. And so I was kind of playing catch up a little bit. So I was like taking stuff like very seriously and feeling like I had like a big task ahead of me to get back to where I wanted to be. But then once like everything happened, it's like whatever, like the routines that I had, like I was like, this is not sustainable. Like I'm like very like dialed in right now and I just can't be dialed in like this always. So it was a bit of like, I haven't taken a break from running or whatever, but it's like mentally I'm back to like, you know, kind of like the summer vibes or like fall training where it's like, you know, just like do my runs and just try and enjoy them for what they are. And like I've set like some different goals for myself. Obviously nothing is race oriented right now, but it's like I haven't, the big one for me right now is I haven't ever been able to get up to the mileage like that I really wanted to do. And that I think like, I think if I can do it, like I'll get some really good improvements that will help kind of take me to like that next level that I want to be at. And so like I have this such a long block of time right now, which like never going to happen again probably in my running career without races. So I'm just very slowly like trying to build up the miles and yeah, just be cautious with it, but like get it up to like higher than I ever have been able to before. So that's kind of what my focus is, I guess.
Cool. All right, let's move to the final questions I ask every guest. First one, funniest drug testing story you've got.
See, I'm like, oh man, this is like my time to shine, because every single drug test is an amazing story, because I have this very deep-seated fear of peeing in public. Like I can't pee in front of people. I just can't pee in front of people. So every single time I get drug tested, like everyone that knows me is like, oh, this is going to be pretty funny. Like something like this is going to be ridiculous. So I have I have too many to choose from. But I guess the funniest times is when there is like a time crunch. Like there's like some pressure, like something I have to go do after. So for example, like a Big Tens, in 2017 after the 5K, I got drug tested, and the 5K is like the second last event of the meet. There's just like the 4x4 after that and the ceremony, and then teams leave really quickly. And we had, we were going straight from that meet. We weren't even going back to the hotel. We're going straight from the meet to the airport. And we had a chartered flight though, which kind of helped, I guess. But we had like a chartered plane, but I don't think it was going to wait for me still. But like, so I was like, it was just me and, one of the assistant coaches, and like, everyone's trying to be like, yeah, don't worry. Like just do what you gotta do. Like trying to calm me down. But I'm just like, man, this sucks. Like the whole team is like waiting for me to pee, like sitting on a bus or a plane. And I eventually got it done. And like, we like, obviously like rush, get to the plane, don't have to, like it's chartered, so you just go through quickly, and just like walking onto the plane is like the last one, and just your whole team is there, and the whole team knows, like your whole team knows that like you've been like struggling away and like drug testing, that like you can't pee in front of people, and it's hilarious. So yeah, that was pretty fun.
That's a great one. Meanest thing you've read about yourself on letsrun.com?
Oh man, I don't really go on Let's Run too often. Like I would say since I've become someone that people would talk about on Let's Run, I haven't really gone on it. Like I used to go on it when I was younger. But sometimes people do tell me stuff that's on there. But like people, from what I see, like people kind of like me. People write a lot meaner stuff about like other people, like Mick, for example. People are pretty harsh on him sometimes. So I think like, There was one that like my chiropractor was telling me about, which was something like, look at how bad of a coach Mick is. Like he doesn't, this was talking about my 2017 season. They're like, he doesn't make nationals or regionals in the 5K in outdoors. And then he goes to Europe for like 2 weeks with a different coach and runs like and qualifies for the world champs. So it's just like a ridiculous thing to say. Like that's about it really.
If you could go on a run anywhere in the world with anyone from history, assuming they could hold a nice conversational pace with you, who would it be with and where would the run take place?
This is a good question. I think for this one, I would have to let the inner fanboy, like running fanboy, come out, and I think I'd have to choose. I'd want to run on Magnolia, go out to Mags, because I recently reread Running with the Buffaloes, and obviously, like, that's like a classic. And yeah, I've never been to Boulder before, so I'd choose that. And then if I can choose like anyone, I might just say like, I might choose like someone a little bit different, like Salvador Dali, someone who's just like an eccentric that would just like have just amazing stories to tell me. Cause like I'm into him a bit. So I've read some of like the stuff about him. He's just crazy. So like that would be just a run of just endless great stories to hear from someone like that.
That's a good answer. Our last one has nothing to do with running. You get 25 shots from half court. If you make one, you win $25 million. If you don't make any, you go to jail for 25 years. Do you attempt the shots?
Yeah, I think I do. Like, there's like a slight degenerate gambler side that like hasn't come out in me for like a long time. But when you ask a question like that, like, yeah, of course I'm going to do it.
Definitely. All right, Morgan. I appreciate you taking the time for this. Definitely enjoy Madison. It's you've got so many great places to run. So makes passing time a little bit easier, but stay safe and thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks to Morgan for taking the time to chat. That does it for this episode of the show. Sidious Mag needs your support to keep these shows coming. So if you've got a brand, product, event, or just general interest in sponsoring the podcast, reach out to me, chris@sidiousmag.com, and we could get talking. The next episode will be my April recap with Matthew Luke Meyer, so look out for that. And we're going to do our best to keep it a little coronavirus free, just so that everyone can keep their mind off the pandemic for a couple minutes. New episodes of More Than Running with Dayton Giordano, Track and Field History with Jesse Squire, and Running Things Considered will also be out this week, so go subscribe and listen to those. I've been your host, Chris Chavez, wishing you some happy and healthy running.